The economy added 244,000 jobs last month.
And more Americans jumped back into the labor market.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for checking out the podcast, the Marketplace Midday Update from Marketplace.org. Happy Friday. It's May 6th.
Happy Friday, Steve. Coming up, while the number of people going back to work is up, commodities like oil and gold keep going down.
And later, the famous house where Macaulay Culkin fended off those pesky burglars, well, it's on the market. All that and more on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
Thousands of Americans went back to work in April as private companies added a slew of jobs to the economy.
A good sign going forward indeed, but the nation's unemployment rate was up slightly for the month, back up to 9%. Why is one number really good, yet the jobless rate is going up?
Jill Schlesinger is editor-at-large at CBS Money Watch, and she's with us as she is every Friday from New York. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
A 250,000 jobs created this past month. Is it as good as it sounds?
It sure is. I mean, 244,000 is great. We had revisions upward for the previous 2 months, so now we've got about 190,000 jobs on average per month in this year. That's great. I also want to note the private sector added 268,000 jobs. That's the biggest job creation number since 2006 in the private sector.
But the unemployment rate, Jill, why did the unemployment rate jump, 0.2%?
This is vexing. But here's the deal. When you have a lot of people who are looking for jobs, that's when they're counted in the unemployment rate. So when people just stop looking, they come out of the number.
Uh-huh.
As more people go back into the labor force seeking employment, now they're counted again. So in a weird way, it's sort of a good sign because people are feeling better.
Good news that more Americans are feeling inspired to look for work.
Absolutely. And look, this is what we need. We know that confidence is very important in this economy. This is a good report. Take it for what it is. Combined with oil prices falling, this could be the best Friday we've had in a long time.
Well, we shall see. Jill Schlesinger from CBS Money Watch joining us live from New York. Jill, thank you.
Great to be with you.
And let's get another take now from Chris Lowe. He's chief economist with FTN Financial, and he's with us now from New York, as he is every Friday. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Well, what does this report tell you?
Hey, you know, for the first time in weeks, I don't have to have my doom and gloom voice today. We really had, it's a terrific jobs report. 244,000 new jobs this month. More important than that, I think, is we had some big upward revisions to February and March, too. So it's not just the best month since the first quarter of 2006. It's the best three-month stretch since the first quarter of 2006.
And it's a bit of a surprise because we'd been getting some indications this week that the job market is not in such great shape. And in fact, things like oil and gold, the prices of those were dropping as a result of that.
Yeah, there's been a real tug of war this year between fear of inflation on one hand, which is driving commodities, and then fear that that inflation itself might cause weakness, which would hurt the economy. The one commodity price, of course, that matters the most to consumers and therefore the economy is gasoline. That finally broke, and we got some relief this week. But what we saw in the jobs numbers is resilience in the economy despite the rise in prices, which I think is just terrific news.
Chris Lowe, chief economist with FTN Financial, thanks so much and have a great weekend.
You're welcome. You too.
Well, economists such as Chris love the monthly jobs reports, but Marketplace's David Brancaccio says perhaps we should be paying attention to a new and a different indicator.
David's Economy 4.0 series looks at how our new economy can better serve more people, and he joins us now. David, good morning.
Morning.
So your alternative index today is what?
Call it the toil index.
The toil index, like blood, sweat, and tears toil?
Yeah, the hustle, the hours of labor you have to put in each month just to cover the rent or the mortgage. It's the creation of a noted labor economist from Cornell University, Robert H. Frank.
And these are the hours you have to put in to cover the rent or the mortgage on what kind of house?
That's the key, Jeremy. Frank and his team figure it's reasonable that Joe average, Josephine average, want to at least buy or rent a typical house that's in a public school district of average quality. Frank put it to me this way.
Okay, I'm the average earner, let's say, the 50th percentile family. It's got to be my goal to at least get my kids into an average quality school. I think we'd think ill of a parent who didn't have at least that high an aspiration.
Okay, but Frank finds that between the number of hours we have to toil away, the number of hours we work per month just to make the mortgage or the rent for the house in the school district of typical quality in a given area has gone way up over the years. From 1950 to 1970, we had to work a little over 40 hours a month to get the house. It was kind of flat during that period. But since 1970, the number of hours has been going up, up, and up. By the year 2000, we were toiling away about 67 hours a month just for the house.
And why is that number going up so much?
Frank says it's about inequality, the widening gap between the wealthy and the rest. The wealthy push up house prices, the market follows, and wages are not really going up all that fast compared to the housing prices. And so just to have an okay place to live in an okay school district demands these longer hours of work.
Marketplace Economy 4.0 correspondent David Brancaccio, thanks so much.
Of course.
Bailed out insurance giant AIG says its first quarter profit fell 85%. Now, AIG has become more dependent on its property and casualty insurance business, which has suffered because of all the recent natural disasters around the world.
Kraft Foods said profit fell by more than half. The company said it may have to raise some prices this year. Meanwhile, Domino's Pizza said costs for meats and cheeses didn't go up as much as expected, and sales were up more than 8% with help from its new pizza recipe.
For more numbers, you know where to go, where you can get a bite of some numbers at our website, marketplace.org.
Now to the marketplace global perspective. The price of oil is below $100 a barrel. A mark it had been above for weeks. Gold prices are off from their recent record highs. Even the price of cotton is down.
And the BBC's Andrew Walker is with us now from London to talk about why we're seeing these drops in commodities. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Steve.
So what's the deal with commodity prices? Why are they dropping?
Well, some people think it's partly about fundamental economic things, so concerns about the strength of the global recovery. If it weakens, that would undermine demand for commodities such as oil and industrial metals. There are signs of weakness in the US that it might be faltering a little, and concerns that higher inflation around the world might lead to central banks raising interest rates. But some people in the market, such as Alan Nuckman, senior strategist at Agora Financial in Chicago, think that prices had just got ahead of themselves and were due to come down.
The big 10% down move in crude oil and silver were long overdue. So you're seeing a combination of factors that kind of gave them a bit of a knockdown. But I look at this as mainly profit taking.
In other words, some investors have been selling to cash in on the price rises.
Why, Andrew, are the prices that are dropping a problem if it costs less for consumers and companies that use these raw materials?
Frankly, for most people and firms, I think it's not a problem. The people who will be hit are the commodity suppliers, for example, the OPEC oil-producing countries, and maybe some investors who've got into the market very late. But bear in mind, with things like oil, the price has only gone down to the level it was a couple of months ago, so no big losses just yet.
The BBC's Andrew Walker in London. Andrew, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
Today in Portugal, workers at a lot of hospitals, schools, and government offices are on strike. They're unhappy that their country's getting bailed out by its European neighbors to the tune of $100 billion. It's not the money workers are upset about. It's the strings that are attached to that money. From Lisbon, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
Portugal's bailout terms appear milder than those imposed on Greece and Ireland. But the finance chief here admits that the cuts in pensions, healthcare and welfare spending will be painful. He says they'll bring on a recession. Portuguese unemployment is likely to rise from 11 to 13%. Ana Oliveira is one of the organisers of today's strike. She says government workers and services will bear the brunt of the austerity, and that's unfair.
It was not the public services that put us into this mess, so it shouldn't be the public services to suffer.
The main political parties and many of the unions have broadly backed the bailout plan. It does seem likely to go ahead, but a general election is looming, there's uncertainty, and discontent here is rising. Portuguese workers go on strike less than any others in Europe, but that record may be tested in the months ahead. In Lisbon, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Well, here at home, the extreme weather is causing big problems in the nation's midsection. 11 counties in Mississippi have declared disaster areas in anticipation of major flooding along the Mississippi River. Meanwhile, in Missouri, where the Army Corps of Engineers is blowing holes in levees to protect towns, the cost of flood damage to farmland could exceed $100 million.
And yet, 400 miles away from there, more than a quarter of Texas is in the middle of a severe drought. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports now on the cost of all this extreme weather.
John Sirier owns a ranch in the rolling hills outside Austin, Texas. He's already sold off three-quarters of his cattle. There just hasn't been enough rain to graze them.
It's just unbelievable to be able to see the extremes, to see some that just have too much, and then others that, like us, we just can't get any rain.
Texas state climatologist John Nielsen Gammon says Texas is having its driest period in 100 years, and it's actually pretty common to have droughts next to floods.
When we have a drought in Texas, it's not like the air is not humid. That humidity just keeps going past us and ends up producing rain someplace else.
He says every day without rain costs Texas tens of millions of dollars. Mark Svoboda is with the National Drought Mitigation Center.
Drought is the number one cause of economic loss in our country every year.
Svoboda says most Americans just don't realize it. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
The future is a little murkier for the nation's Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. That's the new agency set up as part of Wall Street reform. But we're learning today Republicans are trying to restructure the agency before it's even built. Their plans all in a letter sent to President Obama yesterday. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
44 of the 47 Republicans in the Senate signed the letter. 60 votes are needed to end a filibuster and start a vote on a nominee. So the Republicans have guaranteed there won't be a vote. They want major changes first. They say the head of the Bureau would be too powerful, and they want to make the Bureau submit its budget to Congress for approval. Right now, the budget comes from the Federal Reserve. American University political science professor James Thurber says the president can make a temporary recess appointment, but that would leave the Bureau in a weak position.
Weakens the agency because the person does not have the authority of a permanent appointment and the authority of the Senate behind that.
There are already three bills pending in the House that would take away some of the Bureau's authority. One would make it easier for the Bureau's rules to be overturned. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
To Seattle now, Steve, where the tables have turned on the companies that make the yellow pages. Under a new city ordinance, the publishers of those annoying and enormous phone books that I still don't understand why they keep piling up on the porches, because
all it takes is a Google search, and
you can figure out what you're looking for. Anyway, there's a new city ordinance in Seattle that would fine the companies that drop off these books up to $125 if they deliver books to people who have asked specifically to be taken off the list. One city council member told the Seattle Times that 2 million Yellow Page books get recycled every year, and it costs about $350,000.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
We told you about all the jobs created last month in the economy. A lot of those jobs are in the medical and healthcare field, including, Jeremy, have you ever heard of this position? Nursing informaticist.
No.
You have not. A lot of folks haven't. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Gregory Warner reports the job is in pretty high demand.
Don't tell her boss, but Diane Humbrecht gets a lot of recruitment calls.
Several every week.
Trying to pull you away from this hospital?
That's right. But I love it here, so.
Here is Abington Memorial Hospital, where Diane is director of nursing informatics. She helps clinicians talk to the IT staff and vice versa.
So we help translate. I always think of us as a translator.
Between nurse speak and geek speak. For example, when the quick stroke of a pen is replaced by a series of mouse clicks to type in the same information over and over on multiple screens, nurses complain to IT.
And IT will be like, well, why? But if it comes through us, we can explain it in a different way, in their language.
And get IT to make the system easier before nurses revolt. And revolt they have, not at Abington, but at other hospitals.
There are a lot of nurses who did not grow up with computers.
Joanne Spetz is an economics professor at the School of Nursing at the University of California, San Francisco. She says that hospitals are spending billions of dollars to go electronic before a federal deadline of 2015.
Systems work, they can be great for patient care. But when they don't work, either because there's a flaw in the system or because there's a problem with the implementation and the buy-in, it can basically be wasted money. And even worse, we've seen cases of patients getting harmed.
So hospitals are desperate to hire informaticists or technology therapists like Diane.
You gotta go and sit with the staff, tell them it's okay, show them, look, you can do this, and then they're just thrilled.
Nursing informaticists earn an average $99,000 a year, up from $70,000 in 2004. For Diane, there's a greater mission to getting nurses to go electronic.
Because as nurses, we really haven't been able to tell the world, really, what we do. It's all anecdotal. But now I actually have documentation and data to quantify what a nurse does every hour of the day.
So hospitals can learn from the best nurses. And as a nurse herself, Diane is happy to help her profession. As a techie, she knows that nothing's real until it's digitized. In Abington, Pennsylvania, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
Well, in Cuba, the coffee is about to get a little hard to swallow. The island is planning to start adding, get this, Steve, ground-roasted peas to its coffee mix.
Oh.
These are part of the
Some
cost...
Some veggies in your coffee. That's
I guess
nice.
So. Maybe
wow.
It makes it healthier.
Oh, wow.
These are part of the cost-cutting measures being put in place by President Raul Castro, as the BBC's Michael Voss reports now from Havana.
Cuba was once one of the world's leading coffee exporters. But last year's harvest on the state-owned farms was the lowest ever recorded. Today, most of the coffee drunk here is imported. The bitter-tasting pea mix was first introduced in the 1980s, and older Cubans like José Luis Alejo have fond memories of the blend.
I remember it perfectly, and it was acceptable. In fact, when a Cuban was offered pure coffee, many people didn't like it. We thought it tasted bad. The problem comes when you run out of peas and start using corn. It's happened before.
The mixed coffee only applies to the subsidized supplies which everyone receives with their monthly ration card. Until now, the whole family had a coffee ration, but as another cost-cutting measure, children under six will no longer be entitled to their daily fix. In Havana, I'm the BBC's Michael Voss for Marketplace.
And finally, Jeremy, your chance to own a piece of Hollywood history. You're a high roller, right? you can pretty much jet off to wherever you want to go.
Yeah, so maybe, I'm maybe making a huge salary
here in public radio. That's right. I know what's going on with you. Well, the house from the movie Home Alone is for sale. Remember that house?
Of course, I've actually seen
Georgian
it.
Mansion.
I
really?
Once drove up to that house and somebody came because I wanted to see it when I was young. I lived in Illinois and I drove up to the house and the owner came out and goes, Home Alone? I was like, yep.
I knew exactly what you were doing.
Anyway.
Well, that owner is selling the house on the north side of Chicago. The guys, the whole family has lived there for more than 20 years, including a six-month stint while the film was being shot and Macaulay Culkin was running off bungling burglars in the rest of the house. The asking price, $2.4 million.
That seems pretty good, I'd say.
Yeah, but there's one little catch.
Oh.
The makeshift burglar repellent system sold separately.
And you probably can't actually take a sled down the stairs.
No paint cans in the face, none of that stuff.
Oh,
it's all sold
that
separately.
Takes all the fun out of it.
Sure does.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great weekend. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.